I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton,
I'm a man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing, Podcats? Adam Buxton here. It is rather an overcast day here in the Norfolk countryside. A little bit like one of those days from The Road by Cormac McCarthy. You know, a little bit apocalyptic. Having said that, literally within the last 30 seconds, a gap in the cloud over to the west has opened up. It's the evening of the day as I speak. And the sun is now poking through, so the countryside is all lit up golden, even though the sky is very angrily dark and grey over to the east. It's really quite cool. I'm looking at a tree right now, a big oak, and all the leaves are turning gold and they're backlit by the sun, and it just looks crazily beautiful. Rosie thinks it's crazily beautiful as well. But that's probably enough great nature description from Buckles. Let me tell you about podcast number 108, which features a conversation and some music, a performance of a couple of songs from the British musician Michael Kiwanuka. Some Kiwanuka facts for you. Michael is currently aged 32. He was born and raised in Muswell Hill, London, the son of Ugandan parents. Michael's musical talents earned him a place at the Royal Academy of Music, where he studied jazz guitar. Anyway, look, he dropped out of the Royal Academy of Music and for a time worked as a session guitarist before finding the confidence to go solo. After gigging around for a few years in London's pubs and clubs, he signed to Polydor Records in 2011. That same year, he supported Adele, and in 2012, he won the BBC Sound of 2012. That is the annual poll that the BBC undertakes of music critics and industry figures in order to find the most promising new music talent of 2012. No, they do it every year, I think. That same year, 2012, saw the release of Michael's debut album, Home Again. It was produced by Paul Butler of the UK indie rock band The Bees. That album was nominated for a Mercury Prize, as was Michael's second album, which he released 4 years later in 2016, Love and Hate. Paul Butler once again involved in the production, but this time also twiddling knobs were Brian Burton, aka Danger Mouse, the American man, and the London hip-hop producer Inflow. In 2017, Cold Little Heart, the sprawling opening track on Love and Hate, was used as the theme tune to Big Little Lies, HBO's excellent drama about some wealthy young mothers living in Monterey, California. Very good if you haven't seen it. Here's a little blast, and you'll probably go, oh, I didn't realize that was Michael Kiwanuka. Here it is. Yep, there you go. It's a good one. The album Love and Hate reached number one in the UK album charts. Michael's third album, released earlier this month, November 2019, is titled simply Kiwanuka, and once again features fancy electronic inflected production from The Danger Mouse and Inflow, keeping one foot on the cutting edge, ouch, and the other in a past filled with... I wrote this stuff. was trying to be like a rock journalist. Keeping one foot on the cutting edge and the other in a past filled with influences from the classic soul of Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, and Otis Redding to rock and pop touchstones like Neil Young, Jimi Hendrix, Bob Dylan, and Joni Mitchell, just some of the influences you can hear in Michael's work, I think. A recent Guardian review of Kiwanuka by Dave Simpson called it a bold, expansive, heartfelt, sublime album. I would have added Wickwocks and Smart Fart. He's snuck in at the final whistle, says Dave Simpson, but surely this is among the decade's best. 5-star review for that album. Nice. It is very good. My conversation with Michael was recorded earlier this year in Ronnie Scott's jazz club. Thanks very much indeed to them for letting us record upstairs at the club one afternoon a couple of months ago. And it felt an appropriate venue to talk with Michael about some of his musical influences before we rambled about other odds and sods. And I had the privilege of hearing him play a couple of songs from the new record. And to be sat right opposite someone as talented as Michael and have them sing and play was very great. And I was grinning and staring at him with a cheesy expression of love on my hairy face, which you can probably hear if you listen carefully. Back at the end for an apology and a podcast recommendation. But right now with Michael Kiwanuka, here we go. Sat upstairs at Ronnie Scott's legendary jazz club in Frith Street, Soho, London. It's a nice sunny day in mid-September 2019.
Yeah.
I'm sat opposite Michael Kiwanuka.
Hi.
How you doing, man?
I'm very good, Adam. I'm very good.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
I'm happy to be chatting with you today.
Oh, well, thank you. And you're going to play a couple of songs, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
That's fine, yeah.
Cool.
I'd love to.
Are you self-conscious about that kind of thing? Do you feel like you're being made to perform?
In this context, no. But if we were at a dinner party and we were just hanging out.
Yes.
And then like...
Michael, play one of your songs.
Yeah. Like, get the guitar out.
Play one of your special songs.
Yeah, that would
be... Surely that happens all the time, doesn't it?
Maybe with like family members, you know, like aunties and uncles. Not like peers. I think
Piers
people
Morgan.
Are just like, definitely not Piers Morgan, I hope not. But I think they're just like, you still doing music? They're like, what's that? You still strumming? Did you have a gig? They don't really get fazed by, I don't walk into a room and people like hold their breath or anything like that.
What about if you're up in the Hollywood Hills at a swanky party surrounded by movie stars and rappers?
Yeah.
And your host comes over and says, Michael, play us a song. Come on.
Oh,
I don't know
gosh.
Why that woman with that accent is there, but she is.
I mean, I probably...
Has that happened?
That hasn't happened. Not like swanky. I went to a party in... actually, Laurel Canyon. My friend Gus was like, oh, there's a party on tonight. Not in that accent. And I'm not good with accents, so I'm not going to do an American accent. And he's a really good musician and like knows a lot of like the cool, you know, like... I play for Beck or, you know, it's like, oh, Norah Jones's band, that kind of scene.
Joey Waronker.
Exactly. In fact, he knows him really well. And he's like, yeah, there's a party, man. You know, you want to come? I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. And went up with his girlfriend. And it was like, there was no movie stars or famous musicians, but it was like, I don't know if you've like, it's so LA or like, where everything about it was, could have been, but it wasn't. So it was like the house was Paul Simon's son's old house. So it was like three steps removed.
Yeah.
And then everyone that was there kind of like was in a band, obviously, but no one had heard of them, including myself. It kind of looked like a fancy dress party where there was a girl in the middle of the garden playing acoustic guitar in a dress that looked like Joni Mitchell playing an old Martin, singing some song. And it was like, where am I?
Yeah.
And I was there for like 2 hours and thought, I think I'm going to go home. But it was fun. But that's like the closest I've been to one of those kind of parties where they're like, hey, you know, movers and shakers. I haven't really actually been to any of those parties like that in LA, really. Yeah. That was a funny night, though.
It sounds like being on the set of a film about Laurel Canyon in the 60s or whatever.
It was just funny that everything was like three steps from what could have actually been cool.
Right. Are those people that you admired, that sort of Laurel Canyon scene, Joni and David Crosby?
My favorite of that scene is probably Neil Young. Mm. I'm still a huge Neil Young fan. And then obviously everything around that, CSNY, Joni. You know, like, I would never buy like David Crosby solo albums or like Stephen Stills solo albums, but I liked it, and I just liked the romanticism and the Geffen Records. All of that I just like was obsessed with. So it was quite nice being in LA that time. And I wasn't on tour or anything. I was just there with Gus hanging out, making music and stuff. And yeah, you know, I'm a huge fan of that. And definitely as a songwriter, it's something that I think inspires a lot of songwriters, just how prolific they were and the kind of how powerful the singer-songwriter was at that time, you know. It's, when you read about it, it sounded like a really idyllic time.
Yeah.
Quite romantic.
What's your go-to Neil Young record?
I love like Zuma for the Crazy Horse stuff. I like Zuma.
I haven't got Zuma.
Zuma's great because I mean Cortez the Killer, man. I mean that.
Right. Okay. That song, that's on there.
That song is one of my favorite guitar solos.
So it's kind of very rocky. That one is it?
Yeah.
Zuma.
Kind of mellow rock. Obviously, Crazy Rock. Yeah. Yeah. Rockier. On the Beach. I love that album.
Oh
on
yeah,
the Beach.
That's a good one. I've got that one.
I love After the Gold Rush a lot. Yeah. Love that record.
It's Peach.
Harvest is obviously up there for me.
Harvest and After the Gold Rush. It feels as if a lot of those kinds of classic, inverted commas, artists do that pair of albums. Like Van Morrison, you've got Moon Dance and Astral Weeks right next to each other.
Yeah.
Bowie, you've got Hunky Dory and Ziggy Stardust right next to each other.
Yeah.
And Harvest and After the Gold Rush.
I mean, what a run.
Yeah.
I also really like his first solo album, Neil Young, Neil Young.
Yeah,
Neil Young. I love that record.
That's got Here We Are in the Years, doesn't it?
I think so. It's got like The Loner. And it's
that's good.
Which is good. And then it's got The Old Laughing Lady.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love that record.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
He's hard to beat, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
As a character as well.
I got to see it. So around that time, I was obsessed with him. And around that time, I was spending a lot of time in America. I was in Austin a lot, randomly. I would spend time in, like, Austin, Lowe's. And my ex-girlfriend is from Austin, so I'd go there and visit her. And I was hanging out in Austin. And my friend from England, convoluted story, good friend of mine, Josh Brown, we went to school together. He would come out and tour with me and do some guitar taking, and he met a girl at the same time there as well, who were friends. So we would always like travel to Austin and like just have fun basically and hang out in Austin. And I started meeting all these like concert promoters that had heard the first album, like, hey man, you know, I can hook you up some tickets to these things. And then I always wanted to go to Neil Young's Bridge School benefit concert. Do you remember those things that he'd put on where, like, you'd get...
Does he not still do them?
No, because I think he... Well, sadly, his ex-wife passed away, but they broke up before she died, and it was...
Right, and that was associated with her. Okay,
yeah, the school they set up. But he'd always have, like, the best lineups. I mean, my dream was to, like, if I could ever get a gig at the Bridge School, would be, like, the dream come true. I never did, but I always want to go, and it was coming up. It was always in October, and it was coming up, and this... You know, I was in Austin, and this guy that worked for a booking agency could get tickets. I was like, do you reckon you can get us tickets to the Bridge School benefit? I can get some flights up and fly to San Francisco. I was like, yeah. And then, like, a couple of days later, he's like, I got you some tickets. AAA. So I was like, oh, amazing. But the lineup was ridiculous. It was Neil Young and then also CSNY, like, reunited.
Wow.
It was Queens of the Stone Age doing an acoustic set, which is really weird, but still crazy to see Queens of the Stone Age. Elvis Costello and Diana Krall, Tom Waits, who never plays. Uh-huh. So Tom Waits at the set. And a band called Heart that I never actually knew. I think they're big in America.
Heart, the big rockers.
Yeah.
The two big ladies with the big hair.
That's it. That's Heart.
All big.
I'd never heard of them, but they were also there.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. Crazy lineup. So I was like, whoa. And My Morning Jacket were also playing. And so I was like, amazing.
Wow.
AAA, all day gig for free with these like amazing singers and musicians, songwriters, and Neil Young. And then I remember sitting there, and Neil Young comes out first, and he's there with his D35, whatever it is. It's just like the iconic image with his hat on, and it's like walking around with his harmonica with a wireless pack.
Yeah.
Started playing Comes a Time, off that album Comes a Time. I really like that song. And I was like almost in tears, like, oh, Neil Young, oh my gosh, the man himself. But I had, this is AAA, so I went back, so I'm going to go and buy some merch. Bought this like Bridge School t-shirt and then Neil Young was just standing there, like maybe 15 yards away. I was like, oh, on my own. I was just at this point. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. It was one of those moments, one of my biggest regrets of my life, where I just thought, and he, actually he wasn't on his own, he was talking to one other person. And it looked like quite a serious conversation. So I just kind of looked at him and I was like, oh man, he must be, it's Neil Young, he must be talking about something really serious. So if I went over and said, oh my gosh, I'm such a big fan, can I have, I wouldn't have asked for a selfie, but just to shake his hand.
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know.
Because you were being respectful.
I was, and then I was like, but I just, something, part of me was just like, why didn't I just go and say, your music is, and I know you've heard this a zillion times before, but your music has made my life 1,000 times better, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably like my biggest regret of like, just, I'll never meet him probably, just, but then I could have known, you know, I got to actually tell him, the Neil Young, you know. But yeah, that was
I'm sure he listens to this podcast.
Yeah, he'll, so if you're listening, Neil, we've got a couple of albums out now, and if you're up for having a jam, you know where I am.
Well, shall we have a bit of music?
Yeah.
What are you up for playing?
Well,
play anything you want.
I don't know, I could play something off my new album that's coming out.
Yeah.
A single out. Or I could play an older song that, if there's songs that you like.
I don't really like.
You don't like my music?
Your songs.
So let me do this one then, because this one, I think I'm going to play You Ain't the Problem, which is the first single off my new album.
Okay.
Which is called Kurunuka, self-titled album. Funny enough, little side note, but because Neil Young, which we spoke about earlier, is like, I think it is his debut solo album, if I'm correct, but it's not his first album. But I've always been interested in albums that are self-titled, that aren't debuts. I always thought that sounds it's quite cool. It's one of the reasons why I call this album Kurunuka. But this is the first single from it, and it's also the first track on the record. And yeah, it's just a song about, I guess, realising that, you know, there's loads of problems in life, but one problem that there isn't is you, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we're quite quick to blame ourselves.
Right, okay.
But this is just like, you know, no one's perfect.
So what if you are a massive prick?
Well, then you're hanging out with the wrong people.
Right.
You could, you know, a massive prick to someone could be like someone's husband or son.
Yeah.
Or daughter. So if you think of it that way, then they're definitely not a problem.
What if you've murdered thousands of people? I would say then you are. Listen, yeah, I'm spoiling the song.
You are a problem.
That is. But you should write a different song to deal with that eventuality.
Yeah. But let me play this one. This one's for all the murderers and... okay. We haven't soundchecked, so hopefully we'll be fine. La, 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 la. La, 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 la. La 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 back in line, I can't deny myself. Show me the feeling. Oh, you got me wrong. If you don't belong, live in the trouble. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain. You ain't the problem. I live the lie. Love is the crime. It's you I believe in. No need to play myself. No need to die. I'm only human. I'm done. You got to put me on. I know when you come along. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain. You ain't the problem. La 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 I point the gun, you are the one, do all the talking. I try to help myself, you are the one, do all the talking. You got me wrong, I caught you falling, I hear you calling. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain, you ain't the problem. I live the dream, I hope to be who I believe in.
I used to hate myself. You got the key, break out the prison. Oh, I hope to never see time passing. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain. You ain't the problem.
That's great, man.
Thank you.
Really nice. I've read interviews with you where you're saying that it took you a while to sort of get used to your own voice and the way you sing.
Yeah,
I love
the
way you sing, but why did you ever feel insecure about it?
Yeah, it was true. It's because I was desperate to be a guitar player.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was like, the dreams was like, I want to be an electric guitar player. And I had no ambition or like desire to be the center of attention ever. I know it sounds mad because everything I do is about, like, me now. But
yeah.
I didn't really care about that. I just never, like, sang. I never, like, tried to sing. I never thought of it as a thing. I mean, with a guitar, if you, like, make a mistake, you're like, oh, the amp was fuzzy or, like, the guitar's out of tune, it's too hot. You know, you can blame your tool, but singing, it's like you've got nowhere to hide with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of felt like, you know, it was too much, too personal. And I'm like, I don't want everyone to know everything about me.
Mm.
And then the center of attention thing, even now, sometimes I hate it, you know. You get used to it, but like you said earlier, would you ever get your guitar? Like, I'll never get my guitar out at home and play a song to close friends. It's just like, why? You know, it's just too... But at a gig, because there's a reason for it, and there's like, it's an arena for it, it's like, okay, this makes sense. It's like, it's still center of attention, but it's not just like, look at me, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, so see, it was like, I didn't really have a good relationship with it at first, but... Thank God I like got into it because I love it now. But yeah, I mean, but I definitely had to like work to that as well. I definitely spent some time when I kind of got into songwriting and thinking, okay, I do kind of want to sing. What actually happened with me was I dropped out of uni, and I'm a huge jazz. Funny with Ronnie Scott because I'm a big jazz fan.
Are you?
Yeah. So I studied jazz.
Who are your guys?
Well, we listened to Thelonious Monk earlier today, like right. Chris Cross listened to that record. Miles Davis, I was obsessed with in school, so I'll buy any era Miles Davis, 60s Blue Note, straight ahead, like the two quintets, like Tony Williams quintet with the Tony Williams and Ron Carter and Herbie. But then I loved like the fusion in the 70s with Bitches Brew, and then I love the 80s. I just love Miles Davis.
Uh-huh.
Every era, stuff with Charlie Parker. Wayne Shorter, I like 60s, late 60s, early 70s jazz. That's the sound I like. And so I was studying jazz guitar at music college in London at the Royal Academy of Music, very posh. And like, it didn't really work out. So after about a year and a half, I dropped out. And then I started to just go back to songs and start playing. And I thought it would be a good idea to like, I started a band and I was like, it would be cool to like teach guitar because I love the guitar. I'm not really bothered about sessioning too much music I'm not that into because I'm into music that's not around now, like 70s soul and jazz, whatever. But I thought it would be fun to do some... on my own songs in the pub in the evening with my friends because that's so fun, and we would like drive to like Balham or something and play like, you know, the Bedford or something like that. And then I remember like it was the MySpace days, and I remember thinking, oh, maybe I could just like try being a songwriter, you know, and I won't have to be at the front because I kind of hate that. I still hate it at the time, but I could still write songs and be in the studio and all that. And I sent it to this guy, and he was like, emailed back, was like, this sounds quite good. Have you ever thought of... And I said in the email, like, you know, like, get some singers in. I see that you're working with singers. And like, have you ever thought of doing these yourself? And I was like, no, but I'll give it a go. And he's like, come to the studio. And we did it. And it was a good studio session. But when I thought, okay, maybe let's try and be a singer or whatever, I definitely practiced. I knew I had like a voice, but I wanted to do it properly. So I just used to listen to records like over and over and just copy how they sang and try to learn how to sing through Marvin Gaye records, Otis Redding records. Okay, I'll just play it and just repeat and then learn the chords and just like try and do the inflections that Otis Redding would do and Ray Charles, because they were the singers. So I thought, if I'm going to sing, I want to be a good singer. So it took me a while to work up to like a cold or heart. It was definitely like every day. I dropped out of uni, so I had every day. I was just at home playing guitar, making music. So I'd wake up and just practice singing, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
And so you played You Ain't the Problem from the new record.
Mm.
And I saw you saying that it's partly inspired by your tendency to compare yourself to others.
Yeah, and it probably comes from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose at a certain point, driving yourself a bit crazy by doing that and then just saying, okay, like, You Ain't the Problem is a license to kind of give yourself a break if you're in that same frame of mind.
100%, yeah.
Right.
Gets a little boring just like comparing.
And you described yourself as an overthinker when you were younger.
Yeah.
Are you still an overthinker?
Sometimes, not as much.
What form did it take when you were little? What kind of things would you overthink? Can you remember?
Oh man, like everything.
Where does that come from, do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question, because I think maybe it comes from... I grew up in Muswell Hill. I'm Ugandan. And Muswell Hill, if you know Muswell Hill in North London, is a really nice area. But, you know, middle class and mainly just everyone's white, apart from maybe one, two other families.
Yeah.
And everyone,
it's just Ray Davis and members of Madness wandering around.
Yeah, exactly. It actually is that. Yeah. You see him on an Arsenal game in like some pub, you'll be watching it in the corner. And I had a really nice upbringing, so it wasn't like bad at all. Mm-hmm. Like, so just to preface that with that. But subtly there was things like when I go to my friends' houses, they'll be like really big houses and they'll have like two cars and they'll have their own room. And it sounds so trivial, but me and my brothers shared a room and we didn't have a car. So... I mean, no one cared that we had that. And people loved coming around to our house because it was probably a bit different to them. But in my head, it was like, why are we so different to everyone else? And
then, right, okay.
And then we would be like, my mom and dad were speaking like at home in their language, which is Luganda. And I'd be like, they're the only people that have like two languages, this weird African language that everyone... You know, so we stuck out like sore thumbs, man. And no one was ever cruel to us. Or that was... It was actually like people liked it. But I don't know, I had this weird thing of wanting to fit in so much. And because of that, I used to really keep quiet on things and not say everything. So I just think all the time about how to get into the mix without anyone saying too much and being able to meld into the crowd. And I think maybe that kind of got me to just start sitting there thinking all the time, because I was always feeling like, oh, you know, where do I belong? And the same thing that you do when you get to a teenager and that kind of thing. And like, I feel like when you're in the middle of so many different things, because at the same time, our heritage, we were like, me and my brother were seen as British, so we were kind of in no man's land, which actually is great for the creative spirit. Like, it's actually a good thing. But at the time, it was like, oh, you know, when we go to Uganda, we're like these British people, and when we're in England, we're Ugandan. Like, what the hell? It used to really piss me off, you know. I used to just want to fit in, and I got a bit melancholy about it. So I just sit and think about it, you know, and think about what would life be like, and that's probably one of the reasons why I got so thoughtful and melancholic.
Right. Know? Okay.
Yeah. I think, anyway, I don't know, who knows?
Yeah, but, I mean, it must be weird. But I think that's a natural impulse, isn't it? Just to want to fit in and just to, to not want to stand out, really. It's, that's totally...
Yeah, I guess community normal. In one sense. You know, because it's like, now it's a different time, so, like, we're beginning to embrace, you know, oddballs and...
Yeah.
And, which is cool, and being different is, like, cool now. Or woke is what people say, which annoys me, because I was like, I've been woke since I was 12.
Yeah.
Anyway. But you know, you would be like, you kind of watch TV and just be desperate to look for someone that like looked like you to give you almost a permission to continue being yourself. Yeah. Well, that's what I did anyway. I don't know if that's like what other people do, but I feel like community is a bit like that. You kind of all like, yeah, I'll go to this.
Everyone's got their own thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those things are more trivial than others, I suppose. For me, it was being short.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was really hung up about it.
Yeah.
Very sensitive.
Yeah.
And I liked Adamant because I found out from Smash Hits that he was 5'6". quite small, quite diminutive for a pop star.
Yeah.
Even though I was shorter than that at the time, now I'm 5'6".
Yeah.
And it was, I remember being really happy about it.
That's it.
I mean, it's a pathetic thing.
But it's the same, that's exactly what it is for me. That's like, hearing that, it's like, thank God you said that. Because it's like, I had this thing with, mine is also trivial, but it sounds, because it's dressed up in like race and culture, it seems more important. But it is actually the same mindset, because I remember watching, they had these, like, I say this all the time, but in school they had these, people would have these bags, and they'll put all their favorite bands on, like, which was like, it's like sick. And they'll put like Nirvana on there, and then they'll get like heavy. I never used to be into Slipknot and Korn, but Korn and Slipknot would be on there, and all these bands, Pennywise, all these punk bands. And then they would have Hendrix, but I didn't know who Hendrix was, so I was like, must be another one of these like American punk bands,
spotty little white guy.
And then like maybe he looks like Kurt Cobain, and I loved Kurt Cobain at the time. And then there was this BBC documentary, and I was like, oh, I've seen that name, it's on all those bags of those, all those cool people that hang out with those bags. Mum would never let me Tippex my bag, but I would have done that if I could. And then he came on TV, and it was like, I was just like mind blown. And like, and I had like kind of an picky afro then, and like I just started playing electric guitar. Oh man, life was complete, and it was like, I can do it. It was almost like it gave me that, exactly the same way with Adam Ant. It was like, it's weird, but for some reason we kind of need that. I don't know why.
It is weird. Yeah. No, I always remember that when people talk about that, you know, you got to see it to be it or whatever.
Yeah.
And the value of being mindful of that kind of diversity. Yeah. There is something very valuable in it.
So, have you been in bands?
No, God, I wish. Oh man, I've told this story on this podcast before, but my only gig with a band was at school in the music room, and our friend Chris loved Talking Heads, got me into Talking Heads. And he said, why don't you come and do vocals on a cover of Cross-Eyed and Painless by Talking Heads.
Whoa.
But I got so nervous, because I knew all the lads, the hard lads from school, were going to turn up and heckle, because they thought Talking Heads was weedy boy music.
Yeah.
And they liked, you know, Bauhaus and XML Deutschland. So I got so panicky that I got hammered. Absolutely arseholed. Me and my friend.
Yeah.
And then went and did the gig. And sure enough, the lads turned up and were standing in the back heckling in some vague way. And I completely bottled it, and we just walked out halfway through the gig.
Halfway through the gig.
leaving our friend Chris just looking at us going, mate, what are you doing?
What did you say?
I can't remember. It's in my top 10 shameful memories.
Good story, though.
It's awful. It's one of those things that makes me squirm. I mean, most of the things I can't even talk about, because I'm ashamed of that I just described, but most of the things I'm too ashamed to even mention.
Yeah.
Although I will tell you another one that I thought of yesterday when we're talking about... You've got to give me a shameful memory.
I will. All right. We got there, definitely.
We had some builders doing some work years ago when we used to live in South London, me and my wife. And I had a few... Star Wars toys, like I always collected Star Wars toys when I was little. And one of the builders, a young guy, said, oh, you like Star Wars? Yeah, okay, yeah, I've got one of those, you know, dogs, one of the big metal dogs. I said, you mean like an AT-AT? So yeah, one of them, yeah, the big dogs. You can have it if you want. So it's just, you know, it's crap really, I don't really use it, but if you like Star Wars stuff, you know, just give me a few quid and you can have it. It's like, yeah, great. So I paid him probably more than it was worth, but I thought it was fun, and I cleaned it up, spent an afternoon making it look really nice, stuck it on my shelf in the kitchen. And then the next time he came round, he said, oh, is that the dog? And I said, yeah. He says, looks really good, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, I cleaned it up. It's like, oh, right. I'm sad that I feel a bit of an idiot for giving it you now, because a friend of mine's just had a baby, and actually they'd really like that. He'd love that. Do you reckon you might be able to give us it back? I'll give you the money back. And I said, no.
Oh my God, that's so good. That is so good.
And I just thought, because I'd spent so long cleaning it up, I was like, I don't know what came over me, but I just thought, no, you're not going to, no, yeah, I'm not going to give it back.
You're giving it too late.
It's too late. I don't know what reminded me of it yesterday, but I thought of it and it just froze me in my tracks. You know those memories?
Yeah.
Turn your bones to glass.
I know.
And I just felt so ashamed and I thought, why did I do giving the dog back?
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, I've got hundreds of them. It's like, you're right, it's embarrassing. I remember like in school, I mean, I've got loads of stupid ones. Like in school, we would be, I'm not going to use real names.
Yeah.
But we would be like, we used to all go skating. We would go skateboarding. This was like horrible, actually quaking. My feet saying this now. We would go, I mean, the guy's so cool now. It's like, he's way cooler than me. But anyway, we would go skateboarding on Saturdays. And back then it was like £2 travel card.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just skate all day, not eat, but you could skate all day on the South Bank. And like, you go to like a skate park in the morning, there was an 8 a.m. session to 12 in Westbourne Park called PlayStation. I was a rubbish skateboarder, but I liked the scene. I mean, I was like such a wimp, I wouldn't try anything. But I just kind of sit there. And then we would all, like seven of us would be like, at 12, we would like jump on the tube and then go to South Bank and skate there all day. And there was kind of like a new recruit to the group of us skaters, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, he's, you know, this new guy, he's joining us, he's really cool, you know. And then we're like, yeah, okay. And then yeah, you can come with us, you can join in. And we see him in school, and it was like he was really excited to be in this new group of friends. So mm-hmm. he was like trying really hard. We're like, hey guys, you know, when are we next gonna go for a skate? And we'll be like, oh man, it's like, calm down, like we're gonna go, we always go, just like chill. And one time he was one Saturday would go, and we was finished in the morning, and then we'd all jump onto the tube. But it would be like busy, and there'd be like 7-10 of us. So we'd be like, quick, let's jump on the tube. And someone, luckily it wasn't me, but I agreed to it, had decided, hey, why don't we just like get to the top of the tube station and then just wait at the gate and then suddenly make like a run for it and leave this new guy behind, and just jump on the train, and then he'll get lost in the tube and we'll get in and we won't wait for him and the doors will shut. And we really did it at the top. I think we did it on the platform where we just timed it, where we knew that the doors were going to shut quickly. So we'd be like, oh, isn't our train? And then seconds before the doors shut, we'd run on. He'd be like, hey. So we did it. We ran on the train and it worked. He got left on the platform. Uh-huh. And we were like, oh, we left him out. Look at you.
Yeah.
You're on the platform. And we got there, carried on skating. And then 15 minutes later or something like that, he found us, you know, at a different skate spot. And it was just the same as it would be like, hey, guys, I must have just lost you. On the train, really sorry about that, what happened, but anyway, I found you, but yeah, you must have just forgot that I was there, or just so innocent and kind, just thinking, not even accusing us of thinking that, man, you guys left us.
You wouldn't deliberately jump on that.
You just obviously forgot that I was there, and we were like, oh, he's back. And then sometimes I wake up, I remember that, and think, what idiot. We were such idiots just to be like that horrible to someone, to be like, we're just going to leave you in the centre of London on your own because you're just a little bit annoying. You're not even annoying, you're just really nice and like really, really, really friendly. When I think about that, I just think that's basically bullying, and that's such a horrible thing to do. That's a story that I definitely, like, when I remember it, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
One of the many.
I've got loads. It's a weird thing in the modern world, I feel, that in so many ways people are becoming more sensitive and kinder and more thoughtful about so many things.
Yeah.
But actually, things seem to have hardened a little when it comes to forgiveness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That part of the reason it's difficult to exchange these kinds of stories is that you do feel for some people that's who you are.
Yeah.
If you behaved badly at some point earlier in your life,
you're an idiot.
Your card is marked and you will forever be that person. If you had that potential to be so unkind or thoughtless or cruel.
Yeah. I know.
Then fuck you.
Yeah, man.
That's you.
Yeah, you're cancelled. But yeah, I think if people knew half the stuff I've done. There's also like a funny story about, like, you know, like cruel games you can play, you know, like, and it just happened to me. So, and I hated it. But then I went on and did it somewhere else where it's a fake game and you just pretend, you make these two teams and one person in the room doesn't know the game, everyone else does. So you're like, should we play a game? But yeah, let's play a game. It's like, okay, so we're going to think of a story and we're going to say it, but you go outside and then when you come back in, you have to try and work out what the story is about by just asking questions. It's called the yes-no game. And then you go outside and you're like, okay, cool, so I just have to just ask those questions through these yes or no's. I can decipher what they're doing. So they'll come back in and be like, so is it about a film? No. Is it about cinema? Yes. And then you keep going like that, and yes, no, you basically get led around. And basically the aim, all it is to the game is that the people that are saying yes or no, if it ends, the word ends in a vowel.
Right, it's I yes. remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and if the word ends in... And you just basically a game to make someone feel so stupid.
I think it used to drive me fucking crazy.
Yeah, you come, you're like, you're probably like, I don't know, fresh as a week, or like you're meeting some new people. You're like, man, I'm making an impression. I remember I was doing mine and I was the fool. And I was like, oh, I'm doing well, I'm doing well. And then someone says, he's a good friend of mine, Rupesh, and he was like, oh, Mike, you're so good at this game. I'm like, maybe it's my songwriting. I just got an idea for stories and getting so into it. And then half an hour in, it's like, mate, there's no story. It's just they just start laughing at me. I was like, what? And you're like, it's so cool. Luckily, yeah, we're good friends, so it was like in jest. But like, it's funny. You can do it to the wrong person, it'd be pretty cruel. But
yeah, I'm the kind of person I probably would have flown off the handle. I'm one of those guys that would lash out if they felt cornered.
Yeah, man. I mean,
you feel a bit humiliated, and then you just explode.
Of course, yeah, yeah, man.
Do you spend a lot of time on sort of interaction, social media, self-promotion, that kind of thing, being visible?
I'm getting better.
Mm-hmm.
I used to hate it, and I used to not do it at all. And now I've embraced it a bit more, just because there's a couple of experiences I've had where it's been really exciting through it. Like, I remember we were in Australia, we were supporting Mumford & Sons this year, beginning this year, and they were playing these massive arenas. And those kind of gigs are like, arenas, I mean, they're not, I don't know if you've been to many arena gigs.
I saw Bowie in Wembley Stadium.
I mean, that's a good gig, yeah. I mean, that's...
back in the day.
Maybe that doesn't count. Arena gigs can be incredible, but often they're like a bit just... Well, if you're behind the scenes of them, actually, and you're not the main act, they're just like pretty boring.
Because
People are like definitely not there to see you, and you can hear it even more.
Right, I guess people are still coming in and getting their seats and... Right.
Yeah, and an arena is like... If you've got to that stage, that's like the quintessential... Half of it is the fair weather fans, so you're going to get people that are there for two songs.
Right.
Even when you get that big, so you've got some random guy playing these jazz chords. It's like before,
yeah.
Like, what the hell? So you know you're not getting anything back, and you play for like 40 minutes, and then you're like in the middle of nowhere because arenas always have to be out of town. But we also had loads of days off because they're big bands, so they can have loads of days off. So I decided let's do a gig in like a pub somewhere in Melbourne. We were in Melbourne for like 4 days. So let's just put one on, and we can just put it on Instagram and like tell people, and maybe people will come. And it was like, don't know if you ever threw any house parties growing up, if you had your own. I didn't, but it felt like that thing of like you throw a house party or it's your birthday, but you're scared no one will come. You know, you've told everyone, but people are like, yeah, I'm not going to go to your party, I've got other things to do. So it was like sitting there sound checking, like biting your nails, and went upstairs, had a beer, and went back downstairs, and it was packed. It's a little pub, small pub, way smaller than this, maybe 100 people, 150 max. And it was so much fun. Really raw, sweaty pub gig. And we put it out on Instagram like maybe 4 hours before the gig. And I was like, that's so fun. And it was, you couldn't have done that before. So there's so many sides of it that I love. And there's so many sides of it that I hate. So I kind of have been trying to embrace it more and finding my own voice in it. So I'm a bit better now. I'm definitely not like always on there. I'm not that good at it, but to embrace it, yeah.
It would be bad, don't you think, to be so famous that that kind of thing was really not practical anymore.
Yeah, that'd be pretty... That would be pretty lame, although it would be pretty cool to be. I always read those stories in like biographies of like the cops had to shut it down. I would love to have my gig shut down by like the police. That would be like the coolest thing. Like, yeah, man, it got shut down.
It was great.
I always wanted to be able to say that. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
There's a famous one about Radiohead doing that at 93 Street East. Apparently they had to move venues. It just got so busy. I want a story like that. We had to move.
Surely you're at that point. I mean, you could do that in London, surely, couldn't you?
Maybe I should try that.
We go downstairs.
You just do it now.
Yeah.
Do you want to play?
Go out in Leicester Square. Sure. What would I do? Have you got some maracas?
We could do Tell Me Why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there harmonies on Tell Me Why?
Yeah, I think they are.
Speaking of which.
Oh, music.
Would you do another song?
Yeah.
Are you up for that?
I am. I think I'll play another new song.
Yeah.
I'll play a song called Light.
That's one of my favourites.
Yeah, it's one of mine. It's the last track. I always liked last tracks of albums.
Yeah.
Or like track 8. I've always liked that. And it reminds me of like, you know, like picking the acoustic guitar and like, you know, we're talking about all that folk music and Neil Young and Laurel Canyon and stuff. Such a big part of me, but I feel like I haven't really done that for a while. So doing this one, makes me feel quite happy that I managed to squeeze a song like this onto the record. But this is called Light.
Okay.
We're miles apart, but safe from dreams. You're running from the young and dumb. We'll always need one of their own to lead, shine your light over me. All of my fears are gone, and it don't bother me. Now if it's not meant to be, too far to run, fall on your knees to find a love. Your light for me, my only sun, you'll always shine for me. Shine your light over me. All of my fears are gone, and it don't bother me. Now if it's not meant to be, shine your light over me. All of my fears are gone, and it don't bother me. Now if it's not meant to be, I had to lose to understand. Strung out from all the years, pour out a thousand tears. I never knew a kind of man, even if we are miles apart, 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 even if we are miles apart.
That's great, man.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you.
Ah, oh, it's so good.
Wait.
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right, stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No, it's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Continue.
Hey, welcome back, podcasts. That was Michael Kiwanuka. Very grateful to him for making the time to sit down and talk with me. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. I thought those songs were lovely, and it was cool to watch him play them. Thanks, Michael. Rosie. She's sniffing about. She's on the trail of something or other. What are you on the trail of?
Don't know. I just sniff some things. I go after them. You never know what it might be. Might be a squirrel. Could be a rabbit. Could be a small deer. Could just be someone else's poo. But I'll go after it and I'll sniff it out because that's my job. See ya.
All right. You have a good time. Now, an apology. Towards the beginning of podcast number 107, Guz Khan asked me to name my two best friends, or my mandem. I named Garth Jennings and Danny Richards. The question took me by surprise. I haven't been asked who my best friends are since, I don't know, school. So I named the close friends that I've seen most regularly for the last few years. However, many people were upset that I didn't include Louis Theroux and especially Joe Cornballs Cornish. They said they felt betrayed and that they now believed the whole foundation of my partnership with Joe Cornish to be a tawdry tissue of showbiz lies. To be clear, Joe and Louis have always been, and I hope will continue to be, two of my very bestest friends, though their busy, successful lives mean we don't see each other as much as I'd like. I want to apologize to Joe, Louis, and anyone who was offended by my comments. I deeply regret any pain my stupid fucking words may have caused. And I'd also like to apologize to Garth Jennings and Danny Richards if they now feel that this apology has in some way compromised our bestie-bestie friend status. I hope that we can now draw a line under best friend gate and that we can all move on. I'm not even going to get into Zuboff chicken salad gate. Whew! Boy, that was kind of weird. It's the Aziz Ansari awkward segue. Okay, recommendation for you now. Another podcast that I was in. And it's called On the Marie Curie Couch, as in Marie Curie, the charity that helps give care and support to people living with terminal illness. They were one of the organizations that helped when my dad was ill. And On the Marie Curie Couch is a, and I'm quoting now from the thing they sent me, a new thought-provoking podcast opening up conversations about death and dying. It aims to tackle these taboo topics and find out how grief and bereavement shape the way we live our lives. It's part of a big campaign that the people at Marie Curie have created to get people talking about death and dying, something that many of us struggle with, for obvious reasons, I would say. In the podcast, Marie Curie expert Jason Davidson chats to a host of well-known guests about their experiences and how they feel about their own mortality. It's available from the 12th of November via Acast, iTunes, and all the usual podcast outlets. I chatted to Jason, and that episode will be available on the 12th of November of this year, 2019. Other episodes in the series will feature actor Alison Steadman, broadcaster and novelist Janet Ellis, BBC radio DJ Janice Long, political journalist Owen Jones, actor Greg Wise, Oscar-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, and more. I love and more. My conversation with Jason covered similar ground to the conversation I had with Carrie Ad Lloyd on her Griefcast back in 2016. So she was one of the first people to base an entire podcast on the subject of death and grieving and do it in an entertaining, interesting way. Carrie Ad, as far as I'm aware, talks exclusively to comedians, more or less. This Marie Curie podcast casts its net a bit wider. And of course, Jason, the host, is not himself a comedian, but a social worker and a good listener and sort of counsellor in that way. I talked about my dad, looking after my dad. And I guess it's a lot of things that, well, it's a subject that regular listeners will know. I return to quite a bit and continues to preoccupy me one way or another. Wow, I wish you could see this sunset. It has gone, well, it's getting a bit tacky, to be honest with you, because it's so incredibly colourful. It looks like some design sprayed on the side of a 70s combi van with some surfers inside of it. But it's beautiful. So the podcast, I talk about my dad and I talk about, you know, my own feelings about what the end will be like. Hopefully, I don't think it was too depressing. You might find it interesting or helpful, I hope. And perhaps it will encourage you to support the Marie Curie charity. So there we go. I can stand down my sincere voice now. All right. Thanks very much indeed to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for his production support on this episode. Thanks, Seamus. Much appreciated. And thanks to Matt Lamont as well for his editing on the conversation. Cheers, Matt. Thanks once again to Michael Kiwanuka and all the folks at Ronnie Scott's. Hope I can go back and record something there another time. They made us feel very welcome, and I appreciate it. Thanks to Acast for hosting this and so many other great, great podcasts that it's mad. Hey, look, thanks for listening. You are the hardcore. You listened right to the end. Back next week for more waffle with a interesting person. Until then, go carefully and bear in mind, I love you. Bye!